I'm at OrgCon, oh yes, and I'm sat with Terence Eden, a.k.a. Edent.
And now, a personal favourite of mine, stay right here for another instalment from Documentally.
OrgCon 2019, give me your highlights.
It's been absolutely fascinating. I've come to a couple of OrgCons before over the years. I've never seen Edward Snowden speak at one. He appeared via video link from a basement somewhere. That was incredibly interesting. And I think the thing that I've just been in is about Internet of Things and people doing weird design concepts. That's what I really love, is weird designs. So one woman has created... so hard to describe. It's a box, and it listens. When your neighbours are making noise, you push a button on it, and it learns what that noise is. And then after a while, once it's been trained on that noise, it will go... It will just start knocking on your neighbour's wall when it hears, you know, them moving furniture around. And obviously, maybe it's a bit antisocial, maybe it's a bit weird for neighbourly relations, but I just love that idea of, I'm not going to go and talk to my neighbours, I'm going to have a little box which just bang on the walls whenever they're being noisy. The other one, which was slightly more sensible, I thought, was pet feeders. So I don't have a pet, but you know, you can get all these internet-connected feeders and it will spit out a treat for your dog and you say, Alexa, feed the dog in an hour, right? But this is specifically designed for people who are paraplegic or in wheelchairs or, you know, have limited mobility. They want to be able to train their dog, to treat their dog. So, again, something which is built into the wheelchair, when the dog does something good, give it a treat. I just think that's lovely. And rather than you having to fumble around in a bag full of, you know, sticky bits of dead cow or whatever.
Yeah, I love it. I thought it was brilliant.
Optimistic solutions in a world saturated with data that is going who knows where, owned by who knows who.
Yeah, so there was lots of sessions on advertising and what you should do. I block all adverts, you know. There was some talk, should we regulate adverts? No, I just say block them. As my personal opinion is just, it amuses me occasionally, you know, you switch on the TV and you accidentally see some adverts and you think, why are you subjecting yourself to this? Why wouldn't you fast forward them? It's like, I mean, big shout out to all the podcast people who keep their promo links at exactly 30 seconds, because they know that everyone's hitting that 30 second skip. And but I mean, I'm only saying that because I had such a good night's sleep on a mattress.
I bought one of those.
You should buy a mattress from mattress.mattress.com.
I wish we actually had that.
Well, I get sometimes you need sponsorship and stuff, but all this sort of micro-targeting, you know, and whether it's about, you know, we want you to vote this way or that way, or, you know, I've reached that age where when I do see adverts, they used to be for hot singles in my area, and it's now, do you suffer from sciatica and back pain? Take this herbal round. Great, thanks. You know, they've worked out, we reckon this guy is this old, he's probably got a bad back and needs glasses. Rubbish to all that. Just block all adverts.
It's probably reading all the comments with people saying you're old school internet. Not necessarily that old.
This is it. Most targeting is rubbish. I mean, I have friends who, you know, they're female, they reach a certain age, and all they see is, you must be trying to get pregnant. You must want a baby. You must, oh, you're not pregnant. You must need fertility. And it's like, fuck right off. I mean, why do we put up with this nonsense? I kind of get the
lazy algorithms.
Yeah, I mean, if you're watching this TV program, you're probably likely to be this sort of person, therefore you might want that washing up liquid. All right, fine, I kind of get that. But this sort of pernicious targeting of you're of this gender and you're of that age and your parent did this, and you know, all of a sudden it's, I don't know, I find it creepy, distasteful, and most of the time still pretty crap. So I just boycott them, just block all adverts.
What's your guilty pleasure in these spaces, though? You're still active in the Facebook places and such like, where they were very hard to block?
So I don't have a problem with Facebook, and I think it's because the way I use Facebook is probably quite different from the way lots of other people. So I went through that phase where I added everyone at school, and then after 6 months you realise, wow, I went to school with lots of racist idiots, and so I drop them, or you mute them. And, you know, you can go into the Facebook settings thing, you know, so like when people started sharing Farmville, you remember that, so-and-so wants you to play Farmville. There was a setting where you could say, never show me a notification from Farmville or from that newspaper I don't like or from whatever. So I have blocked so much stuff. I still see my friends' baby photos and, you know, someone having a party over there. And, you know, occasionally a rant about something. But I'm like, Facebook, the way I use it is I don't see adverts because I block them. I've blocked all the news sources. You know, I'm sure some of my friends are sharing anti-vax rubbish or something like that, but I don't see it. So I'm moderately happy with Facebook, but that's just the way I use it. I understand why it's socially a problem, but...
So you don't adjust your behaviour when you're sharing into Facebook? Like, could we have a conversation in this corridor the same as what you would have on Facebook?
Yeah, if anything, I'm more open on Facebook. And the reason is that I tweet a lot, but I tweet under my real name. I don't have a problem with that. I'm happy to stand by my opinions. But on Facebook, I'm locked down. I really only add people that I know and know relatively well, and who I trust. You know, if I say something stupid on
Twitter...
But
you're not locked down from Facebook, and they've been selling your data elsewhere.
Yeah, but they've got a fake email address and a fake phone number, and, you know, so I don't care. And as I said, I don't see their adverts. That's probably really naive of me. And maybe, you know...
I bet you somebody in your network has got your real email address in their address book that they...
Yeah, and they've probably created a shadow profile, and maybe they know all sorts of stuff about me. But the last time I had Facebook adverts on, when you were a man, therefore you must want Harry's razors, and I got a big old beard, don't need a razor, and it went, you are a man, you love bacon, I've been a vegetarian for like 20 years, I tweet...
It's working, Terrence.
I go on Facebook
you've done it,
say,
you've broken it.
I say, I'm a vegetarian, can anyone recommend a vegetarian restaurant? So Facebook, with all its wisdom, is saying, this bearded vegetarian desperately wants a shave and a bacon burger. Maybe if they advertised, you know, vegan shaving balm, I'd be more... Like I said, I'm sure I'm being quite naive about this, but because the consequence that I am more worried about is that someone is going to, you know, take a photo that I've put on of me being a bit daft and share it with the world, and I don't want them to. So, you know, I've set my sharing settings so they can't. Yeah, if one of my friends decides to be a dick, all right, they're a dick, and then I'll block them. So, I'm naive. I have the privilege of a mediocre white man that, you know, I don't think a photo of me having a beer at lunchtime is going to do my career any harm. So I think with all these tools, you need to know how to use them. And there was a talk earlier about, you know, people today understand that they are trading some of their privacy for access to this free, quote-unquote free service. And they're not, you know, it's not free, you're paying with your advertising. But if people know that and they understand it, kind of what's the problem? It's like, have you ever had one of those hard sell timeshare things on holiday where they say, come to this meeting room, have a free...
Many years ago when I've gone in with like full shields up.
Yeah, exactly. And so I, you know, I went
for
to
a
one,
free bottle of wine.
Yeah, I went to one for a free bottle of wine. And I sat through, you know, a grueling hour of sales crap to get a crap bottle of wine. I knew what I was doing, and at the end I went, I'm not going to do that again. I know people who do, who go to every, you know, timeshare thing to get the cheap buffet or whatever. But if you don't understand what you're doing, if you don't understand the hard pressure, the hard sell, then yeah, it's very damaging. And I remember a while ago being on Facebook, and I think I was having a look at your Facebook feed, and you were off somewhere doing something amazing, speaking to amazing people, and, you know, I'm friends with Sue Black, and, you know, she was at the
Palace. This is going back 10 years.
Yeah, and she was off doing something amazing, and, you know, my friend Sue Charman Anderson was launching something. I was literally sat in my pants at home going, my life is a fucking mess. You know, look at all my friends who are going out and doing brilliant things. And it's, you know, psychologically damaging. But then once you realise, actually, your friends are only posting... You've never posted, oh, you know, had food poisoning, sat on the toilet all day.
No, you leave that for Twitter.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. People only publicise the great things about their life. I tend to do that. Once you realise that and you can sort of adjust your filters, then I think it's less psychologically damaging. We only see the sort of highlights of these things. So there's plenty of Instagram stars or YouTube stars, you know, I know some people who do very well on YouTube, but equally I know people who graft really hard, harder than I would, and get nowhere. But what you see is this sort of effortless rise of someone. And it's not effort, because you don't see all the stuff that's happening in the background.
OrgCon is all about the educating of people so that they know where... You know where your data is going, that there is a certain amount of protection, and more than anything else, awareness of the trades that are happening.
there's awareness, there's also the sort of issue of regulation. Should companies be allowed to do this stuff, whatever it is? You know, should someone, like, should an insurance company be allowed to look at, you know, if you do a 23andMe, other genetic tests are available. But if you do one of those genetic tests and it says, oh, actually, you're susceptible to disease X, and your insurance company gets hold of that, are they allowed to take that into consideration? Did you realise that? You know, when you thought, oh, it'd be fun to see whether I'm part Viking or, you know, whatever, did you realise the impact that could have on your insurance or your job prospects? Or so people have to understand, but in a way you can't, because if, I don't know, let's take a disaster scenario. So I wrote about this as a short story, which I'll send you the link to. Let's say that Facebook buy 23andMe. If you don't do a genetic test, but your mum and your brother do, Facebook has a pretty damn good idea of what your genetic makeup is like. How do you protect yourself against other people releasing your data? How do you protect yourself against the fact that in 10 years' time, a brand new business may have spun up, or business model may have spun up, that you could have no way of predicting, and you gave your data away for effectively peanuts? You can't hedge against the future.
Or even sold it. I mean, you can sell your sperm now. Why not sell your DNA profile?
Yeah. Well, the selling of genetic material is interesting, because it always used to be the case, I think, in this country, if you sold your sperm, then the child born of that had no rights to look you up or anything like that. And I think in some countries that's now changed. And now, you know, you could have sold your gametes, you know, at university for some beer money, and then 20 years later you get a knock on the door saying, "Hey, Dad,
he's 20 children."
Yeah, he's. And so you went into the transaction thinking the world was set up one way, and then the rules changed a few years later. That's exactly the same situation we're in. You know, you have sold your data information that, you know, you went to the pub on a Thursday night and you drank this beer. I see no problem putting that information out in the world, but in 20 years' time, is that going to come back and bite me on the arse?
So now we've gone to awareness isn't enough. We need more legislation and
Well, I mean, I can't talk
because
about...
Because the goalposts are going to change.
Yeah, I can't talk about legislation and what we do or don't need. But yeah, the world is going to change and we need to be ready for it.
In the meantime, to hold on to your data as much as you can, and you grow a beard or wear one. I'm trying to be inclusive.
Inclusive, yeah. Well, and I think, yeah.
It's... That's not going to help. No. We've just been talking before this recording about the latest facial recognition technology, which goes down to vascular level. So, yeah, good luck with that. Terence, where can people find your writings online?
If you visit me on Edent, E-D-E-N-T, on most of the internet, or just do a search for my name, you'll find me.
He's all over the place, in every corner. And you're not tracking us.
Yet.
Thanks very much for your time. Documentally.